Support for the Closing Market Report podcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments at adm.com/farmerview.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 14th day of August 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson right here in Champaign County. Look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility in Logansport, Indiana. And Drew Lerner will be along, too, this morning on our programming. He talked a bit about rainfall that could be developing and coming into the Midwest via a storm out of the Gulf of Mexico. We'll have more on its track and what it might mean and how much rainfall could come across to Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, maybe other parts of the Midwest, too. And it all happens during this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always find us online at WILLAG.org.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
In Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day higher for the corn and the soybeans. The wheat was mixed. September contract there at $6.30.5. That's up 2.25. December at 6.42.75, up 1.25. The March unchanged at 6.55.5. May futures 6.63.5, down a half. And next year's July, 6.61.5, down a penny. Corn futures at 4.64.75 on the settlement price for the September, up 9.5 cents. December at 4.55.25, up 8. The March at 4.68.25, up 7.5 cents. And May contract at 4.76.5, up 7.5 as well. July of next year, 7.5 cents higher at 4.82.75. December settlement price there at 4.94.25. Up 9 cents for the day. The August soybeans went off the board at 13.68, up 8.25. September at 12.69.5, 11.75 higher. November beans at 12.39, up 11.25. In January at 12.43.25, up 10.75. The July contract at 12.36.5, up 5.5. And next year's November, $11.89.75, 2.25 higher. Bean meal at $4.33.90, up 70. That's the August, and it's now gone. Oil at $42.37. That's down 21 cents for the day. Live cattle futures finished the October at 128.17.5, a dime higher. September's at 157.45, down 25. And lean hogs at $88.15 for the day, settled $1.62.5 higher. You're listening to the WILL-AG .org Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like for the day. Nearby September crude oil at $106.87 a barrel. That's up 4 cents. The RBOB gasoline or wholesale price at $2.98.3, 4.1 cents higher. Ethanol futures at $2.22.5, 8.5 cents higher on the day. And the spread between those two is now 75.8 cents. That's 4.3 cents narrower than it was yesterday. Diesel fuel at $3.47, just about unchanged. And gold futures at $1,334.10 an ounce, up $12.80. Let's take a look at the weather forecast in just a moment as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area. Just a reminder that Drew Lerner will be here at the bottom of the half hour from World Weather Incorporated to take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast for our area. Mostly sunny skies today, 75 degrees and northeast wind at 6 miles an hour. Tonight, mostly clear and a low of 49. Tomorrow, sunny and 77. Thursday, clear and low of 53 in the evening. And Friday, sunny skies and 76. Friday night, partly cloudy and 58. Saturday, sunny and 80 degrees. Saturday night, partly cloudy and 61. On Sunday, mostly sunny skies and a high of 82. Sunday night, a low of 63 and partly cloudy. We'll start the work week on Monday, mostly sunny with a high of 84 degrees, partly cloudy on Monday evening and 66. And Tuesday, mostly sunny with a high near 85 degrees.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at agrigoldgiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening, of course, to Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
It is the 14th day of August. This is the closing market report. On the phone line with us to take up what happened in the futures markets for the day, Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Jackie.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, today was different than yesterday, and yesterday was different from the day before. And, well, it just all keeps changing. What do you make of it all?
Well, it does. You know, I mean, we had such a nice move higher on Monday with the surprise as far as the corn numbers go, and even the bean number. And then yesterday was a very disappointing day in the marketplace. We had no follow-through. It just was, it was almost as if the trade decided, well, it doesn't really make any difference if we have a lower corn crop or not, which in some respects is true because we could lob off, you know, 800 million bushels and still be at a billion bushel carryout according to the projections. But, you know, the today they came back in and said, oh, the weather looks a little bit drier. Basically, I think, you know, we're beginning to develop in kind of a day trading attitude. In other words, you know, we'll go with whatever the direction is of the day, and that's what we'll do. But I think that I'm hoping that we can get a few legs and find ourselves moving, if not higher, at least somewhat sideways in the marketplace for a while until we do know more about what's going on. And that's really not going to be available to us until the, you know, until the September report.
This is the first time we've really had a chance to talk since the report was released, at least during the closing market report. What'd you make of the numbers for corn in particular?
Well, I think it was very interesting. You know, when you looked at the drop that we had, they went from 156.5 as far as a projected yield down to 154.4, which is pretty dramatic for the USDA, and especially right now. I have a sense that they looked at what happened with the beans and how many acres were prevented plant and how much we lost there, and they said, you know, maybe we do have more problems out here than we think. But what I thought was ironic is they went ahead, and even though we lowered the crop, they lowered the exports by 25 million and feed by 50 million. Those two just don't seem to jive with each other, but, you know, that's the reality. Had they not done that, we'd have been down, you know, to a 1.7 plus billion bushel carryout. And that would have probably sparked a lot more short covering in the market. You know, the weather continues to be dry. There's just no question about it. And, you know, the hybrids that help us so much as far as production goes in this dry weather can actually hurt us because, you know, like the ones that are made for rootworm control, they have to build huge amounts of bulk, use a lot more nitrogen, and especially draw more nitrogen at this time of year. So I think the USDA was... this report was more realistic, let's put it that way. I think it brought them into line with some of what we're seeing out there and what we're hearing. We're hearing about the flyover reports and the huge holes in a lot of fields, the lack of pollination in other fields. And we all know that we're really not going to get any decent numbers. This September report might not even give us what we want because we just lack information in terms of how many acres we actually planted out there. So I think that... I was pretty happy with what they did this time. I thought it was much more realistic.
Do you think the corn-to-soybean ratio that is on the board will change very much, or should?
Well, I think that, you know, when you look at the ratio, I've contended, I said it this morning, I think 2.8 is realistic, and that's primarily because we have such tight stocks on beans, and we do not have that situation with corn. Therefore, it would say that, you know, the bean price has the right to go higher without taking the corn price necessarily with it, but on the reverse side, it will only go so much higher before it will firm the corn price. You know, the other ratio that's really interesting right now is the March bean March corn ratio, which is what the Brazilians use basically, or the South Americans use to determine whether they're going to plant corn or beans, and it's at 2.65. So it would say to me big time, we're planting more beans in South America and we're going to be cutting back on corn. And so, you know, ultimately that will have an impact on us. We had a gigantic bean crop coming out of there this year. We certainly are not looking forward to another really large crop, but I think they, you know, they learned their infrastructure just can't handle the two different crops at one time. And so I do expect that we will probably continue to see the ratio strengthen, but I think it will only, I don't expect to see it go to three, but it could happen.
You suggest that the Brazilian infrastructure can't handle the two crops. Does that mean that the second crop corn being harvested now is just being put on the ground and might go out of shape fairly quickly, or what's your thought?
No, that's exactly what I'm hearing, and you know, it's not surprising. After having been down there in 2006 and then having talked to numbers of people who go down there regularly, the infrastructure is so that at the ports they can only load out one type of crop at a time. And until they're done loading out that crop, they aren't going to switch to another crop. And you know, we expect that this bean crop is probably going to continue to be loaded out possibly into November, December, maybe as far out as January. Well, there's no place to go with the safena corn or the, you know, just the regular corn. And so it's not a good situation. I don't think there was a lot of good thinking that went on before they went and increased their crops by about 25%.
You know, I suppose that means that's 4 or 5 months on the ground, which we do here in the Midwest, but we don't do it in warm and kind of wet weather. I don't think it's going to get nearly as cold there as it does here.
No. And especially when you consider that so much of the corn that's growing is actually grown up in Mato Grosso and in the, you know, in the more northern states where it's hotter.
Right.
You know, we don't think about that. You know, we talk about northern states here, we think cold, but down there, northern states are closer to the equator and therefore it's hotter. A lot more pests. All kinds of problems.
All right, turn your attention to a different country, China. Have they been in the marketplace?
Oh my goodness, yes. 840,000 million metric tons yesterday of purchases. Unknown 140,000. You know, they just never cease to amaze. And yet at the same time, yesterday they come out and say, well, we're going to sell some more of our reserves. You know, that's always China's way to control price for us. You'd think the trade would be smart enough now to have figured that out. Because every time they come out and say that, they offer at prices that are so high that their local people aren't going to buy. But ultimately, it helps take our market and crush it. There was no reason for beans to do what they did yesterday, and just they should have extended their gains. But at the same time, it's pretty hard to do when you have that type of an announcement coming out. So I think that, you know, the demand from China, when you look at the world numbers and you look at their import demand, compared to this year, 59 million metric tons, next year, 69 million metric tons, that's huge. And so I just don't see any big slowdown in the near future from them.
Two things on wheat. This year's crop, how did it proceed through harvest? Lots of thought that there was damage there. And then look forward into next year's crop and what a late fall might mean for soft red.
Well, you know, when you look at this year's crop here in the U.S., we certainly have had our problems. There's more vomitoxin around than we've heard of in a long, long time. And, you know, that is going to that has implications as far as feed use goes down the road here. So I think, you know, from a U.S. standpoint, we have an opportunity to see this market go higher. When you look at hard red wheat, hard red had a difficult time this year. And I mean, I have clients that when you look at out into Kansas, you're going to see yields anywhere from 3 bushel or totally off the market completely, nothing, up to maybe 50 or 60 on irrigated land. Certainly a disappointment, there's no question. When you look out into the fall, just like it has an impact on double crop beans this year, you know, the late harvest that we had has an impact on our double crop bean crop, putting it behind. That's the same type of thing we're looking at with this later potential harvest. Hopefully, we're not going to end up going out into I guess it was March that one year that I remember down here by Anderson's. We saw them actually harvesting corn, but that was
Oh, that was a couple of years ago. Yeah,
that was a couple
of
years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, not really. And I think it was 2009 is what it was. But but at the same time, we're hoping that that's not going to be the case. But we do, you know, I do anticipate that that is going to cause some problems, and so. When you look at the big picture, they actually increased the world feed usage on wheat yesterday, or on Monday, excuse me. And, you know, when you look at that for us, the Black Sea and the French wheat, which dominate and control our, well, I shouldn't say control, but impact our prices here for hard red and for soft red wheat, continue to be higher than ours. And so, you know, if we keep a U.S. dollar at the level that it's at right now, Todd, there's a good possibility that we could really see some major increases in exports of wheat.
Right. Hey, turn your attention to livestock very quickly for me. I want to go through some of the Tyson things and the feed additive and what you think it means to the way cattle make their way through the marketplace, both for the livestock industry, beef cattle prices, and for corn usage.
Well, you know, when you look at the Tyson situation, you know, where they have banned Zilmax, and no doubt that will probably that'll have the same impact on Optimax, which is another product that does very much the same thing. Ultimately, what they do is they're fed in the last 20 days. They help cattle convert feed better than they would normally at those heavier weights, and therefore they add about anywhere from 25 to as high as about 40 pounds of carcass weight, more beef, basically, to the animal itself. Well, with Tyson coming out and saying that after September 6th they're not going to slaughter anything that that has been used or any carcass that has been affected by Zilmax, basically, the implications are, and we saw it in the marketplace, less beef. You know, that less hanging beef. Ultimately, what it means for a farmer is usually a longer feeding time because you don't have as good a conversion. And that's very positive for corn in so many ways. The thing, it's a double-edged sword, okay? I have mixed feelings on this entire thing. I think that we as an industry, as individuals, have the right to use whatever products are out there. I'm kind of glad to see that they're going to stop using this. I never saw it as a real positive for the beef farmer. I did see it as a very big positive, you know, for the processor. And so it was one of those tumble down effects, Todd. If the next door neighbor's using it, now I've got to use it because I've got to be competitive, you know. And so it went across the United States in that type of fashion, and therefore, you know, we didn't have to have as many cattle to produce as much beef. And you know, I think this is a good thing in the long run, and I think it'll be good all the way around for us as you know, for the corn producer, as well as for the beef producer.
Hey, I'll see you about an hour. We'll make our way to Watsika to First Trust and Savings Bank for our ag panel this evening.
You bet.
All right.
See you then. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson. She's right here in Champaign County and will be with me along with Steve Fried and Chuck Shelby and Watsika. That starts about 6 o'clock this evening right there on the main drag, Route 24. Tomorrow, don't forget that we have Agronomy Day on campus. Starts at 7 a.m. I'll be sending the rack wagons into the field, and you can talk to folks like Emerson Nafziger about what he sees in the field and what he thinks the conditions that we've been making our way through this season has done to potential yield.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Well, speaking of Emerson, last week I think I ran this, but we wrote it up as a story. Jackie mentioned it this morning about how Emerson sees the corn crop and whether it's catching up or not. We'll talk to him in just a moment about that, a story I produced a bit earlier in the week.
Agricultural market reports on WILL are made possible with support from Busey. Small business is the next big business. So Busey offers solutions to fit growing business needs, from customizable lending options to succession planning. Busey, your dream, our promise.
The question every farmer, every grain elevator, every buyer of corn is considering has to do with how soon the U.S. corn crop will mature. It's clear the crop will be raised, but it was sown about 3 weeks late from New Orleans to the Canadian border. This has many implications for the commodity markets, but the further north you go, the more dire those effects become. Will the corn crop mature before a season-ending freeze? So let's start with a given. University of Illinois agronomist Emerson Nafziger says a corn crop that starts the season 3 weeks late is only 1 to 2 weeks behind by midseason. It just catches up. Work from Purdue and the Ohio State outlines how fast. Here's the way Nafziger considers the corn crop and growing degree days.
I like to think of it as you kind of, you know, you have this thing stretched out in the beginning of the season, but 3 weeks later planting may only be a couple hundred growing degree days. By the time you get to the middle of the summer, then that's only a week behind average. And so, but this year, because of the cool temperatures, our growing degree day accumulations in July were below average. And so that difference is actually a little bit wider now than it normally would be, even with the delay in planting.
Looking forward, Knapsager is a little concerned because of the predicted below average temperatures in August.
So if we get normal temperatures from here through September, I think we'll get most of this crop done in the areas where they planted later, particularly in the northern corn belt, areas like this where they're not tasseled or not pollinating yet. That's where the real concern comes in. And you'd have to look at that and say, it takes a real optimist to figure that this is going to get done before the average date of first frost.
Knapsager says the nation needs a nice long fall to make things go well. Given that, he is not concerned about the yield potential of the crop.
I think our yield potential is pretty high. Sort of pushing forward here, obviously September's a much cooler month than August on average, and if the cooler than normal continues to be the case through August, that means losing another, let's say, 50, 60 growing degree days in August, and so then we're 100 behind. And we need all the growing degree days that we're going to get at this point to get the crop not only finished and safe from being damaged by frost by the first frost, by the average frost date, but just to get it, you know, we'd like to get it done before that so it can do some dry down in the field.
So the question at hand really is not if the corn crop will come in, but rather in what condition will it come in. Good or bad, it's pretty likely at this point to be big. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Let's check the cash grain market now. Breanne Stauffer is on the phone line from the Anderson's Climbers facility in Logansport, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Breanne.
Good afternoon.
Hey, tell me quickly about yourself. Where'd you come from and those sorts of things?
Yeah, I'm new to the Andersons here. I'm originally from Delphi, Indiana, big metropolis that it is. Spent a little time buying grain out in Iowa once I graduated from Purdue, and now I'm back here close to home and really enjoying it. So.
All right, so tell me about basis levels in the area.
Yep, we've seen a little bit of strength this past week as it stays cool outside and we bridge this gap from old crop to new crop. There's some end-user coverage, you know, for the later part of September time frame and mid part of September. So we've seen basis values come back trying to scrape up that last bit of old crop corn out in the countryside or those that had held on. Just to kind of see what this basis would turn out here as we approach the new crop.
How far over are you?
We are $1.70 over the December contract right now for old crop corn.
And that
in relation to fall delivery at 15 under is quite a premium.
Oh, that's a huge premium. Is $1.70 enough to draw the end of the old stocks out?
It depends. Some people are ready to throw in the towel, and others are just kind of waiting to see. They've held on this long, just kind of waiting to see what happens the first part of September. So,
do you have your bids in front of you?
I do have my bids in front of me. We have for August delivery today, we are $6.25, and for new crop delivery, we are at $4.40.
Okay, thanks so much.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Breanne Stauffer is with the Anderson. She's at their Climbers facility in Logansport, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. Don't forget, you can hear her again if you'd like on our website. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org. This is Illinois Public Media.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, Pioneer Seeds, Standard Grain, Cornerstone Building Products, and Risk Management Commodities. Thanks to these businesses for their support of WILL agricultural programs.
A couple of things as we make our way through the end of the program. Don't forget to come and see us tonight at First Trust and Savings Bank. That's in Watseka. We'll be right there on Route 24 downtown, just directly across from the bank. I think the address is actually 120 Walnut Street. We wanted you to give Jordan a call to make sure he knew you were coming, but come at 6 o'clock rather than 5 o'clock. Don't worry about the meal. If you want to talk with Steve Freed and Chuck Shelby and Jackie Venks, that all happens tonight. And then tomorrow, I'll be out at the South Barms, the Research and Education Center that belongs to the U of I here in Urbana-Champaign for Agronomy Day. We kick things off at about 7 a.m. We'll start sending the rack wagons into the field. You're certainly welcome to come and visit with us. Emerson Nafziger will be there, Mike Gray, all the extension professionals. You can talk to the weed scientist, Aaron Hager, about the problems you might have had in the, especially the no-till fields, if you happen to have those this year. And you can listen to them in the field, what they have to say about the research they've been up to, and more importantly, you might even give them some ideas about the kinds of research that you'd like them to do in the future. Agronomy Day runs from 7 a.m. To about the noon hour. It really comes on to a finish about 2 o'clock. But show up at 7. There are four different rack wagon tours. You want to make all of them. They all take about an hour. And then at the noon hour, the coach for the Illini basketball team will be speaking. So it should be a great day, and we hope to see you out there. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City joins us to take a look at the forecast. Drew, thanks so much. During our morning reports this morning, you told us about the disturbance that was developing in the Caribbean that might very well bring some rainfall to the Midwest. Are you following it closely?
Well, we are. We're continuing to monitor this. The system is going to be whipped into the U.S. rather quickly, and I think because of that, there's still some debate about how significant will the storm actually become. But it really doesn't matter when it comes down to moisture for the Midwest. I think it's just a question as to what path the storm system will likely take. It has been shifted to the west today, much more likely to move through the central Gulf Coast region instead of over Florida, the Florida Panhandle, that is. And so now the forecast is the debate is over where the path of the system will go once it gets over land. Now, landfall is probably going to occur on Friday or early Saturday. And as it comes inland, it will probably move north, northeastward initially, and then more northeastward. So it's probably going to spread most of its heaviest rainfall from Mississippi and Alabama into Tennessee. And then probably a portion of Kentucky will be impacted. But most other areas will only see light amounts of rainfall. And that would include central and southern Illinois, a big part of Indiana, and a fair amount of Ohio as well. Early indications, and there's still a potential here for the storm to take a different path, but it looks like a half to 1.5 inches will occur north of the Ohio River. Mounts to the south could run 2 or 3 inches. You get down at the Tennessee Basin, it could be multiple inches.
And if you look out a little bit further, is there another system that might bring rain to a larger part of the Midwest?
Well, you know, the week outlook next week is starting to look like a more typical summertime weather pattern. We're going to have a weak ridge of high pressure trying to build into parts of the Midwest. It's not going to be very successful because we have so much moisture around that's going to be feeding up underneath the ridge, and it'll keep it unstable and fairly weak. But what will end up happening is we'll have scattered showers and some thunderstorms occurring fairly often over the course of the week. At the same time, our temperatures will be notably warmer back into the 80s and perhaps some lower and a few middle 90s in the western Corn Belt. So we'll probably accelerate the drying rates across the region. The crop development, which is so very important, will actually have a chance to accelerate as well. We really have to move these crops quicker to maturity, especially in the upper Midwest, because we are still concerned about the prospect of a frost freeze in the month of September.
You know, the old adage is that rain makes grain, and you've told me about rain, but it doesn't sound like it's widespread coverage exactly, or at least in very large amounts. What's your whole assessment of the process over the 10 to 14-day period?
Well, I think in general it's not a bad scenario. Well, unfortunately, we do have those pockets that are still fairly dry out there, a fair amount of Iowa, certain portions of the Dakotas and Minnesota. There's even some areas in Illinois. All of these areas will probably see conditions are probably somewhat similar to what they are today, maybe a little drier when we get out 2 weeks from now. We will have accumulated a greater amount of heat units, which is probably very important. But at the same time, these areas that have drier biased environment will probably still be kind of hobbling along. We'll probably look for a better rain event for some of these areas and probably have to look fairly hard for it for at least over the coming week to maybe 10 days. And then things might change a little bit after that.
Thanks so much. Drew Lerner, of course, is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report for Wednesday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.